This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back for hour number two of The Big Show. It is Barry, it is Nick, it is Joel. We call ourselves The Usual Suspects, but we call you guys that too because you participate in the show.
Tell Craig Ackerman to stop using our name.
Yeah, how about that the other night? I think we all caught it. Starting lineups of the Laker game and Ackerman and Bullard. And Ackerman says, for the Rockets, the starters, the usual suspects. Come on,
we
Craig.
We love Craig.
Yeah, we appreciate the love, but give us a little extra love then. Point out who the actual usual suspects are instead of trying to attribute it to the Rockets starting lineup. We know who was here first.
Yeah. Yeah, us.
Damn right. Chris Paul came late, so he doesn't count. We were here first.
You want to get this Eagles call?
Yeah, let's get the Eagles call out of the way from Nick before we get to your net. What's their net worth contest?
Nick, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. I don't know if y'all watched the Sunday night game, but that was some awful officiating. I'm an Eagles fan. I'm from here, but all my family's from Philly. So we were watching that game, and there was three flags thrown on the Seahawks, and one was picked up, and like a ton on the Eagles and stuff that was happening for like the Seahawks that they would throw a flag on, which was nonsense. They wouldn't throw for the Eagles. I don't know, man. It was just an awful game called. And then the one last night, is there something going on with like the refs? Cause it feels like the replacement refs all over again. What do y'all think?
I didn't really notice a lot in the Eagles game. I didn't think that there was a lot to it, but I, when I hear a fan call in and say that their team's not getting treated fairly because of penalties, I tend to think that fans tend to see what they want to see, and you don't look at it as objectively as you might.
In a lot of cases,
need to.
Yep.
Last night I don't have any dog in the hunt, but again, I didn't think there was anything out of the ordinary. I didn't watch the whole game. I saw bits and pieces of the second half, but there might have been some egregious calls, but.
I'm with you. I don't think that the first thing I thought about when he at least admitted he's an Eagles fan. I mean, it's the same way in any team. It's like me with the Packers thinking that, you're biased. So I get it. And you're passionate and there's nothing wrong with that. But I don't think as a whole, the league has really fallen off that much in terms of the level of officiating. And it's a tough job. Look, they say all the time, and they used to say it for the NBA officials, but it's true of any official in a major sport. The refs have the toughest job in the world in terms of the sporting world because of the fact that you're always going to piss off somebody, and you've got to try to do your best to try and stay middle of the road and make the appropriate calls. And that call is going to offend one side or the other, and it's really a lose-lose situation, but someone's got to do it.
Yeah.
A lot on Twitter, and I'm looking at it on the article too. I just couldn't confirm, but a lot of it on Twitter where they're complaining about some of the offsides calls that the Eagles got. And then apparently this ref, Tony Corrente,
yep.
Apparently he's officiated Eagles games before bad, and Eagles fans are not very happy about it. So yeah, I see what you're saying, because when you're a fan, you tend to see all the calls that go against you and all the calls that you go your way, you tend to overlook. But
the only egregious call that stands out to me from the entire weekend was in the Panthers game when I guess it was Ron Rivera was upset that
I know what you're talking about.
There's somebody jumped off sides and into the neutral zone, yep, and got back, and they didn't call a penalty, and it cost them a first down and a touchdown.
Yeah, should have been a free play, and yep.
And then later in the game, the roles were reversed and they called it. Well, I would have lost my mind at that point. But that one stands out over the weekend as the most egregious one that I saw. And now, I felt like he had a case and a gripe.
I will say this, Nick, if you look that up too, that to me, if there's a track record, now you're talking about some stuff that I would be upset about. Now, I'll be honest with you. When I was working for the team, we knew three officials that had it out for the team. And we knew when you saw the officials for tonight's game are on the official score report, you automatically winced and went, oh, God. Because that meant whether it was the coach or one of the players that had beef, or it was just overall a general feeling that you got from that official, you knew, and in most cases, the track record showed that it was not going to go your way in terms of a lot of the calls that night. And you want to not believe it. But again, because of what's happened, especially in the NBA with Tim Donaghy and the book and everything else, and how he tried to highlight how officials can be shady and they can use personal bias and gambling and other things in on it, you got to kind of, you know, look at it twice and go, you know, there's a track record there. Yeah. We knew guys that didn't like Yao Ming, and they came out one time and made public comments that were completely critical, very derogatory towards Yao Ming. And it was notated. And you got to, you know, those things, when there's a track record involved, it can happen to anybody once. But if there's a track record, that's the stuff I worry about.
And the problem is when those things do come out, usually the league's not going to do anything about it. Because then they would be admitting to the bias existing and it having an effect on play.
It's a bad look for the league as a whole. Yeah, it's exactly like when the book
came out. Because I remember when the whole Yao thing came out.
Yeah.
And there was league memos that were leaked, and they denied it and deny it to this day. But there were, I don't know if it was emails or memos, but there were things about Yao where he was officiated differently on purpose.
Van Gundy was so passionate about that. But then there was the derogatory comments by an official towards Yao and his ethnic origin and everything like that. That kind of all of a
did
sudden
did he ever ref
like,
a game, ref a Yao Ming game again after that?
Sure. Yeah, the only official I can remember ever being taken off and never to return was Jake O'Donnell, because Jake O'Donnell had a beef with Clyde Drexler. And if you guys remember, in the playoffs, Clyde was tossed, I think it was against Phoenix, and he didn't have it coming. And Clyde went absolutely ballistic nuts. And when they went back and looked at it, and then they did some research, they found out it was a personal vendetta, and Clyde didn't have anything to do with it. And Jake O'Donnell never worked in the NBA again.
Wow.
And he was a pretty well-known, pretty highly respected official. He was also the guy that Akeem hit in the grapes. When Akeem got into it before he really found the Muslim religion and didn't get the technicals anymore, I believe, again, it was against Phoenix. He was so mad at a no call that he was kind of on the ground, and he reached around and swung and caught Jake O'Donnell right in the nethers.
Yeah.
So,
I'm sure that was painful.
I'm sure it didn't feel good, because I don't think those refs were in cups.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, it could happen, but I'm with you. I just think, you know, sometimes the officials try to be bigger than the game.
Well, it's obviously it's dirty if you're doing it intentional, but in terms of honest mistakes, like bad officiating, I feel like in the NFL it hurts a lot more. Like, you know, you mentioned the Panthers game. I mean, they could have had a touchdown. It's so hard to score in the NFL. You know, in the NBA, we tend to have, like, makeup calls, right? You miss a call, or, oh, that's going to be made up on the other end. And it may not ever be made up, but you can kind of make it up just because there's so many calls to be made. But in the NFL, if you make one bad call and you potentially take away a touchdown, that's so hurtful.
In the game last night, A.J. Greenwood had his third touchdown.
Yeah,
and they took it away because of a really
questionable call. From a team and a career standpoint, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you and I were talking about it in the production meeting. The only thing I do like is every league has a rating system, has a way to judge officials. We know that in Major League Baseball, you know, based on how their reviews come out and all the numbers add up, that's who the umpires are that do Major League Baseball playoffs. But in the NBA, it's a game by game thing. And now it's transparent because they're also admitting when they miss calls and calling the officials out, which means they're being more put on the carpet and in the media eye and in facing speculation and criticism because of the fact that they're admitting when their officials make mistakes. But the other night, Sean Livingston, in a game between the Warriors and the Heat.
That was BS.
Yeah. And I'm glad that the NBA took action against the official, but if you missed it, he thought he got fouled. They didn't call it. He went to talk about it with the official, but they ended up going forehead to forehead. And when I looked at it initially, I said, oh, the referee created the contact there.
Mm-hmm.
But well, I couldn't tell they were going to do anything about it. And they threw Livingston immediately. And the Warriors bench and Kevin Durant, who's been very vocal this year, they had a problem with it. But I thought it was going to be Livingston got suspended because it's in the rule book. You can't draw contact with an official. But yesterday it comes out, I believe it was Courtney Kirkland, the referee, suspended for a full week of games.
Good.
Because they did admit he made the first action to move towards the player to create the contact. Now, the thing I don't agree with is Livingston still got suspended again.
Yeah, that's BS. That's my problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, I understand he confronted an official, but if the official doesn't go at him, contact's not made. If you get the ejection, then you get ejected. But I don't think that anything that he did demonstrated a one-game suspension.
Yeah, it wouldn't make sense if you reversed it and a player goes and makes contact with the official and they go forehead to forehead based on the contact being initiated by the player. They're not suspending the ref for that.
Nope.
So, yeah, that to me, that doesn't make much sense.
Yeah. And in real time, it doesn't look like when you see it. It seems like they both kind of they went head to head. But like when you go back and look at the replay and get the right angle, you can clearly tell that he's the one that instigated the ref. That mm-hmm. is. So, yeah, I mean, it's not going to hurt the Warriors that bad. No offense, but it's Livingston. But still.
Well, Durant can't keep.
Yeah, Durant only.
Stay out of trouble.
Do you see the numbers on that? I think he was only tossed once in like 800 and some games, and now he's been tossed three times this year. And he even says he's got to do a better job controlling his emotions. But dude's kind of, even when you look at his comments from the offseason on, he's gotten extra salty.
I think his personality has completely changed.
I agree with that.
Completely changed. He's not that cool, calm, like passive guy anymore.
I wonder why that is too. Going to Golden State. What's brought that out of him?
Because he went to Golden State. I can tell you why. He liked it. And in Oklahoma City, they don't bother the Thunder players. The anonymity they have there is fantastic if that's what you're after. And he liked being that quiet, soft spoken guy, always the good guy, always, you know, the guy that everybody loves to love. And when he went to Golden State, everybody started loving to hate him. And then it got even more intensified by the fact that, you know, he was going to win a title. And then right after the title and the, you know, everything from the inner liners to his shoes that Nike did with all of the, you know, the barbs back at the critics and all the things like that, it started to build. And I think if he could do it all over again, he might like to go back to that anonymity of being the quiet guy that everybody loved, because I don't think he's handled it very well. He's gotten very sensitive about the fact
that. It just didn't stop, though, man. It would get to me. It just, the hate just did not stop, and it continues. And then now when you have.
But then he got caught with the second Twitter account.
That was terrible. That was pretty embarrassing. And like you see him make more, like you want to see, when you see like a guy that's cool and calm and collected, you sometimes want to see him to be a little more fiery, but you don't, you know, just to see like some personality, but you don't really get that vibe out of like Kevin. You feel like the type of fire, it's just like bitterness.
But I don't know that you take that out on the people on the court if fans are being a-holes, which, I mean, the three of us, from our small sample size of what we do, can attest to the fact that people can be, well, let's face it, they can be dicks. But you, on the court, it's a whole different thing. Like, if we've got a texter that's being a jerk to us and we have a guest, we're not going to take it out on the guest. We're not going to take it out on the interview. You take it out on the person that's doing it or the fans that are doing it. And so it doesn't make sense to carry it over onto the court and let it affect you there, and then you're just being, to me, it's that's your yeah.
Now, am I a dad or a coach when I say he's killing his team too? Because luckily,
no, you're honest.
Because he even said, I mean, at least I've saved it for the end of the games. And I thought that was a stupid comment to make, because he's trying to say, hey, at least I played 3.5 quarters and got my minutes in and my numbers up, so I helped my team. No, the critical point in the game, now in a lot of these cases, at least they've been up by double digits, but if that's a tight game, that's the worst time to get thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, don't pat yourself on the back for still being an idiot, because there's no right time to get thrown out unless you're up 40 with, like, you know, a quarter or less to play and you know it's in hand.
No.
But even still, you don't do it. It's a bad look. So, all right, so we got to get to your game show item of the day.
Yeah, we'll just do the net worth thing next.
Yeah, net worth coming up. Then we're going to have at 2:30, Tom Zenner's going to join us. If you're out there holiday shopping and you're looking for something for that Astros fan on your list, Tom just completed a really nice coffee table book on the Astros and their run to the World Series, kind of chronologically going through the entire season. He wrote it. He's published it. And it's a good get. We'll even give you a discount if you want to check it out and buy it online. So don't go anywhere. We've got a full agenda looking us in the face, and we're going to stare it down next right here on The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, we're back. Usual Suspects rolling through hour number two. Barry teased it earlier. We said we were going to do it at two, and we lied. We didn't cheat. We lied because we didn't get to it right away. But we're still going to get to it in the 2 o'clock hour. What are we going to call it? What are you worth?
What are they worth?
What are they worth?
Yeah, because so yesterday, just to set it up, we were talking about Lil Windex, and you typed his name in and net worth popped up, and it got me thinking, because I was even lamenting, how do these rappers make money if you're selling songs for 99 cents and they can't be worth that much money? So I started looking into it last night and this morning, and I ended up coming up with a list of just random celebrities and how much they're worth, because I think some of these numbers will surprise you guys. And I was interested to see how close you could come to figuring out what these actors or rappers or whoever else is worth. So I'm going to throw out some names, and you guys tell me what you think as far as net worth. So I'll give you the first one as an example, okay? And then you guys are going to be guessing from there on out, all right?
Cool.
So, yeah, you put your Googles up. All right. So, yesterday we brought up Wiz Khalifa, and we talked about how is he making any money. His net worth, Wiz Khalifa's net worth, is $45 million. I would have never guessed that in 45 million years. No, I'm just giving you the first one. I'm just giving you the first one. Well, so let's talk about some other musicians.
Okay.
Lil Uzi Vert, another name that came up yesterday. What do you think Lil Uzi Vert's net worth is?
I'm going to say $22 million. It's a total guess, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. These are all just total guesses. I don't expect you guys to be close.
I'm going
to
say 15.
He's $3 million. That's
it.
Wow. Yeah. All right, so let's transition to somebody that we all know and love, Snoop Dogg. What do you think Snoop Dogg's net worth is?
$90
million. I'm going to say $110.
$135 million is Snoop Dogg's net worth, which is crazy. But now compare that to somebody like Taylor Swift. What do you think Taylor Swift's net worth is?
$500 million.
$250 million.
$380. So you guys split the difference. What about Justin Bieber? Do you think he's worth more or less than Taylor Swift?
I think less now.
Yeah.
Less now, yeah.
$265 million. A name that also
Not bad,
yeah,
by the way.
Oh, not bad. A name that came up yesterday that I found to be an interesting story behind how he made his money. Psy. You mentioned Gangnam Style and how the internet went crazy over him. Take a guess at what Psy's net worth is.
Well, he's probably making money overseas, though.
He is.
That's a good point.
But take a guess at what his net worth is.
I'm going to say $5 million.
I was going to say six, but I'll say six.
$6 million?
Yeah.
$60 million. Psy is worth $60 million. How is that possible?
Gotta be money overseas, right?
Well, so I looked into how is this dude making his money, and they have okay, so it says Psy's 3 billion video views have earned him millions worth of ad revenue sharing. From the 2.7 million iTunes downloads, he earned another 2.4 million. So he made $2.5 million on iTunes. His streaming revenue was pretty low at $60,000. He also earned an estimated $4.6 million for endorsement deals. And that's the thing I think that gets lost in some of this is, yeah, you got a guy like Psy who got money off of YouTube and everything else, but then he was an endorser for Samsung and everything else. So.
You guys are idiots and a-holes. Why are we not putting our heads together instead of production meetings and making one hit song?
Yeah.
One stupid, mass-marketed hit song, and we'd all be loaded for the rest of our lives.
Yep. My good friend Alyssa Milano.
Bang the blanket and we'll have the dogs in the video. We're going to make millions.
My good friend Alyssa Milano, how much do you think she's worth?
$36 million.
I'm going to say $125 million.
$10 million.
Wow.
Yeah,
she spent all her damn money.
Actually, I was reading about it. Her accountant screwed her. He invested in a parking lot, and she lost a lot of money.
So, her and Matt Damon, right? Didn't Matt Damon should have been making money off of, what, Who's the Boss?
Yeah. John Daly, how much you think he's worth?
He's blown a ton.
I know, but you look at all the money he's made. What do you think he's worth with endorsements and everything else?
$60 million.
No, I'm going to say like 18.
$2 million.
Yeah, he blew a lot.
He's broke almost. You know that
there was more money in golf.
Right?
No, there is, Nick, but he blew it because he had addictions.
Do you guys know who Dan Bilzerian is?
No.
He's the poker player and the boats and the chicks and
T-Pain's
the Instagram.
Got that song on him. Yep.
Yeah. How much do you think he's worth?
But he's like a trust fund baby. He's
a trust fund baby, but his dad basically filed bankruptcy after he got arrested. So he's a venture capitalist, he plays poker, and he's an actor. What do you think he's worth?
Oh, he's an actor, all right.
$20 million. I'm just going to throw that out
there.
Okay. I'm going to say 80.
$150 million.
Wow.
Yeah, that shocked me, too, to find out he was worth that much. All right, I'll throw some others out there, and then we'll start getting to the real money. Will Smith is worth $260 million. Halle Berry, my girl, 80. How much do you guys think Vin Diesel's worth?
With the fast
150, maybe 200.
Fast thing,
nailed it. 200. Yeah,
that's a lot because of money.
Fast
for a
yeah, you're right. Because the Fast and Furious series, that's going to go on forever.
Well,
right.
Is it now? Now there's a huge feud. I don't know if you saw it, but Lisa was watching her show.
Tyrese
this morning.
And The Rock.
Yep, exactly.
I saw
yep,
that.
Yep.
Poor Kevin Spacey's only worth $100 million.
God, so what's he going to do the rest of his life?
He'll get over it. Joel Osteen, how much do you think he's worth?
Oh man, it's a
big
one.
I bet you he's worth some money.
What you think?
That's a big one. I'm going to say $800 million.
I was going to say it's close to $1 billion too, but
no, you guys are way off.
Well, you just
way off.
Okay, so what is
40 million?
That's it?
Yeah. That surprised
I really thought
me too.
He was close to like a billion. You know why I was going to say close to a billion? Because for some reason, when we were talking about all the potential buyers for the Rockets
right.
and all the net worths, that I thought he was one of the guys that.
No.
But think about
40
that.
Million. He that's gets, it. I mean, that's a lot
I mean,
to
that's
be a
obviously
preacher.
A great, yeah.
Barry
that's a
set
lot.
All the books, right? Then all the. He does a world tour like a rock band all across the country doing events at major stadiums.
At least the summit itself has to be worth.
And then the network rights. Every time he gets an affiliate in another city that's carrying his sermons on Saturdays and Sundays, whenever they're or overnights, he gets money for that too. He should be worth more than 40
All right,
mil.
Let's keep going. Who's worth more, Donald Trump or Oprah?
Oprah.
By 0.1 billion.
Oprah's the richest woman in the world, isn't she?
No. The Walmart lady is. The daughter of Sam Walton.
Oh, I thought Oprah.
Oprah's worth $3.2 billion.
Yep.
Donald Trump's worth 3.1. How much do you think Pablo Escobar is worth? Well, worth.
How do they calculate that?
Well,
that's got to be in the billions, right?
$30 billion.
Yeah, it's drug money. That's got to be in the billions.
All right, so now so we'll do some famous Houstonians, and then we'll talk about some of the richest people in the world. Yep. Houstonian-wise, how much do you think Beyonce's worth?
$250 million.
I'm going to say $200 million.
$500 million. Wow. I knew she was worth a lot of money, but that's a lot. Her and Jay-Z combined, $1.4 billion. Jay-Z's worth $900 million. She's worth $500 million.
Wow.
All right. How much do you think Paul Wall is worth?
Man, I'll say $800,000.
$5 million.
Is he really?
Yeah, Paul Wall, $5 million. What about Bun B?
He's not worth that much.
Bun B? You think he's worth more or less than Paul Wall at $5
million?
More. No. Nah. Man, you that's tough.
So?
I would think Paul Wall's
throw
more.
Throw it out there.
I'll say 10.
Bumby's worth $3 million, so $2 million less than Paul Wall.
Yeah, I thought he was less. I really did. Yeah.
Really?
Slim Thug is worth $2 million. Now, so I've told you those. What about Riff Raff? How much you think Riff Raff is worth?
It's a hassle. I don't know. I don't know who Riff Raff is.
How much do you think he's worth, Nick?
I have no idea.
He's worth $6 million. Riff Raff. Riff Raff is worth more than Bun B, Slim Thug, and Paul Wall. He's actually worth more than Bun B and Slim Thug combined. That is a shame on everyone in this planet that made Riff Raff worth more than Bun B and Slim Thug combined.
And then,
that's just ruined my
but
life.
But then you bring up Psy.
Yeah, well.
Psy's worth all of those guys and then some.
But over out east, I get it. You know, he's a big deal over there. But Riff Raff, really?
I'm telling you, idiots, we have to put our heads together and up with some stupid music video and song.
Last three before we go
be
to the break.
Marketed.
The three of the richest men in the world, Jeff Bezos, who founded Amazon.com, is now the richest man in the world. And they calculated it after Black Friday. What do you think his net worth is?
Oh, he's...
Richest man in the world.
Yeah.
Tom says $100 billion.
Okay, Tom's cheating. Don't give him the damn answers. I'm asking Nick, not you, Tom. Yeah, $100 billion.
Really?
Yeah, Jeff Bezos is worth $100 billion. Bill Gates is worth $90 billion. He got passed by Jeff Bezos, and Warren Buffett's worth $75 billion.
What's Paul Allen?
I'll look that up.
Because Paul Allen owns the Seahawks, the Trailblazers, and was with Bill Gates.
I was just
going
to ask you, does he still own Portland, the Portland Trailblazers?
Yeah.
Paul Allen is... Oh, that's not who I was looking for. It takes 1 second. Okay. Paul Allen is worth $19 billion.
Wow, not even close to Gates, right?
No.
Huh.
Not even close. So there you go.
Well, a guy that's worth, well, whatever the authoring 50 books will get you and radio and TV, I'd say he's worth at least $1.99. Tom Zenner's going to join us next. He's got that Christmas gift for all you Astros fans. And we'll talk about some of the other books he's written along the way. Stay tuned. He's coming up as well as a whole lot more show right here on The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, we're back out of the halftime break. 90 in the rearview mirror, 90 still to go in the big show as we welcome in Tom Zenner. Tom Zenner is joining us. He is the author of a brand new book. It's a coffee table book. It's a hardcover. Hashtag Hugh Winners in terms of Houston winners. It's a chronological account of the 2017 run of your Houston Astros all the way to the World Series championship. Tom, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Great being here, guys. Thanks. Absolutely. Appreciate it.
I see that the prerequisite for the show, Nick, is that you have to have glasses on in the studio. So you better go out somewhere, some way, and find yourself a pair of glasses before this thing is said.
I like black rim glasses. I like those.
Or just be grateful you can see.
That always helps.
You don't need help.
Yeah. I've had LASIK, helps. And I still have to wear these stupid things.
And I'm not eligible for LASIK because the eye problems I have, so I got to wear these ugly things, but whatever. They look good on you, though, Tom.
I'm sick of them, too, believe me.
So you, to give the listening audience a little background, sure. This book, you wrote from cover to cover. So you wrote the entire book. All the pictures are from AP, so you got your pick of the litter there. But this is not your first rodeo with this kind of thing. You've done, what, about 50 books?
Yeah, about 50. Yeah, so I've got this little niche as far as doing championship books, and it's a lot of fun. If you're a sports fan, you know, I've been in television and media and sports my whole life, and this was just a natural extension. But it's a blast because, especially when you do a book like this one, because the first World Series ever, it was so special. I think it's probably my favorite book that I have done. So I've done 50 of them. Whenever a team wins a major championship, we'll crank one out. Mm-hmm. 192 pages. There's really nothing like it. It is the perfect gift if you have an Astro fan in the family or somebody you know, because it covers the whole season, opening day through the parade. And I really, really work hard in getting into the mind of a Houston fan and writing it for them and in a way they'll enjoy and cherish it forever, because it's really a quality product. They'll hang on to it for years.
Now, you don't do a book for everybody at the beginning of the year and follow all of them, right? I guess you wait till the World Series and then write two books, so you got a stack of Dodgers books at the house?
Yeah, exactly, right? And I live in L.A., which is interesting, and I was pulling for the Astros all the way because I always pull for the best story. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, man, I was hooked on that team. They were so much fun. I don't like the Red Sox. The fact they took them out in four, I thought was beautiful. And anytime you could see the Yankees losing, just everything the city went through. That's why it was such a big deal for me to really, really write this one the right way. Because you only win a World Series for the first time one time. So fans are really going to cherish this book. And that team was just so special and unique and likable and good. I mean, there was just so everything they did, man. It was just a magical season. You couldn't make it up. So, yeah, I've done. Usually the model is you got to write two and then be ready. Now I'm kind of shifting it where I want to get through the parade. So I wait until that team wins and then I finish it up.
So you used to, though, in some of these other books that you've written in the past, you've had copies for the other teams along the way until you knew which one was going to get published because the winner was crowned.
Totally. I've got like 50 PDF files of losing teams. I was thinking of starting one called Losers or something.
Hashtag global losers.
Right? Well, you could fill up a library in Houston then. Oh, look, I'm going to get a lot of hate now, but that's the truth.
It'll start rolling in.
But, you know, the book really is, if you're an Astros fan, it's going to give you chills just going through it, because we're really, really careful about getting all the right photos, telling the right stories, and just bringing that emotion to the forefront.
One thing I noticed in the book is throughout is you've got these winner's notes.
Yeah.
What is that?
Fun facts. You know, this is not for NASA rocket scientists. Mm-hmm. This is for everybody. Whether you jumped on the bandwagon at midseason, if you're a lifelong fan, doesn't matter. So I write it for anybody that's in that fan base and they're going to like it.
You got a chapter on Verlander.
Yep. We went special section on Verlander, Altuve, Jim Crane, the great ownership group here, and of course, Dallas Keuchel.
And the reason I say that is because nothing was left. Like, a lot of these things get to publication or close to publication right at the end, they get it out as soon as they can, and they didn't have time to backtrack and get that story with Verlander or get the parade, like you said. Every detail is in this book. And the other thing that I think is neat for an Astros fan is everybody's always looking for something to get signed. This is the kind of thing that could sit on the coffee table, but it's like I compare it to the NBA at 50 book when that came out with the 50 greatest, because you can have it on your coffee table, but if you know you're going to come in contact with somebody, what better thing to have signed than a great picture in this book because it's all full color, all glossy. Like, say you see Correa somewhere and you get him to sign on the cover.
Absolutely.
It just makes it more valuable.
Get him to sign it. And, you know, it's hardcover. It's not going to, like, fall apart in a hot summer here. If you see it online, it's winnersbooks.com. Winnersbooks.com really gives you a great layout of what it looks like. It's like hardcover, 192 pages. Promo code is Houston17. So a special one just for you guys and the listeners listening right now. Save 10% on the book. And it really is the perfect holiday gift.
I could definitely see this like in a man cave somewhere for big, especially baseball fans, Astros fans. What I like about it, though, now, how far did you do? Because I see like game four. Like right now, I'm looking at this page 94. It's the American League Division Series Game 4. Did you break down every game of the playoffs that the Astros were in?
Yep.
With pictures and descriptions and winner's notes and fun facts and all that? Yep. That's pretty cool.
Here's the way I laid it out. Started with expectations at the beginning of the year. Kind of general. What were people thinking? You know, we were long past those three straight 100-loss seasons. Playoffs 2 years ago. What was it looking like this year? So we did that. And then I took it month by month. Highlights of that month. Game, walk-off wins, big pitching performances. Keuchel was so hot early in the year, he didn't lose for a few months. So just kind of did the big milestone kind of overview of each month with the right pictures. Went heavy on the All-Star game because six players were in the All-Star game. And then, of course, when Harvey hit, we had to have a section on that. I didn't want to overdo it, but it is such a big part of the story. And I thought we handled it just right. And then after that, it was all, you know, Verlander coming over, you know, the playoffs starting, 101 wins. And then every game in the playoffs is six pages long.
I even noticed in here, as I was flipping through it when you gave me this copy, I did even notice you had the quote from Yuli where he says he wishes he could take it back. So I like that you haven't excluded things like that. That's part of the story. That's part of the process of what they went through. And you've got the quote in there from him as well. So that's pretty cool.
Hey, thanks for noticing that because you don't want to overdo it, you know, but because I'm writing for the fan base here. So,
but it happened.
It was part of the storyline and the fact that he's going to miss five games next year. So you touch on it and then you move on.
I like the fact that you've done radio before because you did all my work for me. You already told everybody where to go to get the book, how much the discount is, what the code is. I mean, if you want to do that again, I'm just going to step aside and let you do that because people are looking for Christmas gifts.
Hey, if you want to do your shopping, you can knock off every Houston Astro fan on your list right now. Just go to the website. It's winnersbooks.com. Promo code Houston17. Winnersbooks.com. Promo code Houston17. You're saving 10% and you're going to have this thing for the holidays.
No doubt about it.
I tell you what, I didn't expect the pictures to be that good.
Thank you.
It's nice.
It is high quality.
This has far exceeded my expectations, if I'm being honest.
Thank you. And I can't wait really for you guys to really read it and dive in and enjoy it. So
that's the greatest thing about it, too. There's so many of these books out there right now, but this one seems to cover all your bases, no pun intended. But it's also something that you're going to have and hang on to for a long time. So, Tom, we appreciate it. Thanks for stopping by. I know you're heading off to Los Angeles tonight to get back home, but keep rooting for those Astros back in the Sunshine State.
Hey, I am a long-term fan of them right now. And when you dive in that deep with them, you feel like you get to know them. So I'm rooting for them every year.
Absolutely. There you go. That's Tom Zenner. Great dude, a great follow on Twitter, and also a great book, winnersbooks.com. Check them out. Put the promo code Houston17. Get 10% off that Astros book for your holiday shopping. We're going to be back with a whole lot more. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
You heard the man. It's the three of us and all of you up until 4 o'clock as we start to get you refreshed on some of the news of the day. We talked about Monday Night Football. We talked about a lot of different things, but some of the things that have come out, Florida State has found their new head coach after much speculation and the fact that he waffled back and forth between wooing Florida State and going back to the University of Oregon. Willie Taggart is now leaving Oregon to be the next head football coach at Florida State University. That being reported by John Canzano of the Oregonian in Portland. There was a lot of back and forth on that one, Barry, where he was trying to use the offer from Florida State to try and get more money out of Oregon. Phil Knight, the big donor, the owner and the president of Nike, the creator of Nike, so to speak, had said, hey, you come talk to me before you accept anything because I'll match it. Evidently, that didn't happen or not to anybody's liking, or he just really wanted to go back to where some of his roots are. But Willie Taggart going back to Florida State.
By the way, Phil Knight worth?
Well, that's a good one.
$25 billion.
Yeah. Only 25. I say this.
Tennis shoes.
I say this. Only 25, but you would think he would be kind of up there with in the Paul Allen, Bill Gates.
With Nike and stuff. Yeah.
How much is he worth?
$25 billion.
Wasn't Paul like 19 or?
Yeah, Paul Allen.
Oh,
was,
really?
Yeah.
So he's in the Paul Allen range. Yeah, but he's not in the.
He's not in the Bill Gates computer range. Software range. No, that's got 90 it. Billion. Poor guy. What a broke weirdo.
Broke individual. Yeah.
$25 billion. You're broke. Yeah, I'm with you though. It was interesting to see how Taggart was trying to play both sides, and eventually at one point, Oregon said, "Look, you."
Canzano wrote the article. You're better have a legitimate offer from Florida State because it looks like Oregon was inching closer and closer, pulling their offer off the table of an extension and going, hey, man, just go.
Yep.
And then if he blew both the Florida State deal and the Oregon deal, they said what was left over or what he would be left to take would be way less than what he was trying to get out of either school.
I think it was the right move, too. I think you're better off at Florida State. I think that's a better job than Oregon.
I tend to disagree with you to some level simply because of facilities and the Nike involvement and the fact that from a recruiting standpoint, these kids these days, as a dad, Barry, I'm saying this, these kids these days, but they are so enamored with the uniforms and the Nike factor and all the
but uniforms
facilities.
And stuff can be done anywhere.
Yeah, not like they're done at Nike.
I get
Phil
it.
Knight
I get it. Not like they're done at Oregon.
At
but at the same time, I don't know that. You're within range of, you know, probably the bulk of the recruiting hotbed in the United States at Florida State.
But you got to get an inroad.
You can get Florida. You can get Texas. You can get everywhere in between. You're not getting that as much in Oregon.
And keep in mind why Jimbo left, because they don't have football-only facilities. The coaches' pool is not what the coaching staff wanted it or what the head coach wanted it to be. So there's some hurdles to get over, and if he can get that stuff done, you're absolutely right that Florida State has always been known as a
premier
program.
He's not going to be the one that's
going
to get him new facilities.
But I tend to think that way. I think that you needed a big oomph name to kind of carry on, at least in the interim, until you can get those kind of things as resources.
Well, maybe that's why they offered it, because they don't want to be bullied by a big name.
Yeah, I have the feeling that they don't want to change.
If you're the Florida State, decision makers, and you're like, well, if we get somebody like a Saban, not saying Saban, I'm just saying that type of that level. Yeah, if we go out and get Kevin Sumlin, he's going to come in. He had the swag copter. He was used to those facilities. He was used to it being done a certain way at A&M. He's going to come in and make those demands, and we're just not ready to meet those yet. Let's go out and get a guy that's just happy to be here.
And it's quite possible, but in the meantime, you can see the program take it down a few notches because of that.
Yep.
So we'll
see. Backfire.
I mean, if he can continue to recruit, which he should be able to do, if he continues to at least do okay or do good with the recruiting, it might supplement for a lot what they lack, but I don't know. I don't
it's
know
a
what
hotbed,
he's recruiting.
But now Miami's on the uptick again. So now you're competing with Miami and Florida State. And Florida's got all those things we were just talking about. They have premier facilities. They got the Nike deal. They just went to Brand Jordan, which actually boosts them even more.
Yep.
So Florida's going to be swagging for quite a while. That's going to be a competition where you better make sure you're at least getting in the conversations and getting into kids' living rooms, because that's going to be interesting to find out.
Dr. Dre texted the show and said, how much is Yo-Yo worth? Do you guys know who Yo-Yo is?
I've heard it.
I do not know who that is.
She was a rapper that came up under Ice Cube when Ice Cube dropped America's Most Wanted. She was on, and then she had the song You Can't Play With My Yo-Yo.
Yes, that's exactly what yep.
Yeah. She is worth $2 million, Dr. Dre, on 290. $2 million.
What I did notice, because I did like a tad bit of research too, like on like why some rappers are making more money and some of them are not. Uh-huh. A lot of them, like these upper come, like Uzi Vert, like you were talking about.
Uh-huh.
These,
Lil Uzi Vert.
They have like a contract that like extends over three albums. So they have to make three albums to fulfill, like it could be like a $5 million
well,
contract
get an advance
for like three albums.
Yeah, they'll
which
get
is
the
really
advance.
Not that much.
So no. Well, but it comes out of their pocket. So they'll give you a $6 million advance, and if you can make an album for $100,000, you keep the rest.
The rest, yeah.
And then, but then they, you know, you're basically the advance, the money you make off of sales, they deduct the advance first. So if you were given $5 million to cut a record, and you spent $2 million. Then you've got $3 million left. But the first $5 million in sales that the record company would pay you, they take back because it was an advance on the money.
Plus, as I alluded to yesterday,
so you got to make more than $5 million to see a profit after the advance.
Most of the profit on your first three albums is going to the record label.
That's what I say. Yeah, it's the advance, because you get the advance to cut the record and live on, and then they take the advance money out of your sales. So you have to break even. If they gave you $5 million, then you would have had to have made $5 million in your royalties and your percentage before they start giving you money back.
And then it depends on how the deal's written, because a lot of entertainers, especially in the music industry, state that the way they make the money, and why you always say, why are these people still touring? Because when they go out and do concerts, they end up getting more money for themselves. That's why they're constantly out there trying to make the extra bucks.
Yeah, they make a lot of money on merchandise.
Yes.
I mean, that's a big thing for comics. In fact, I have my shirts coming in this week. I'm excited. I'll make some money at my shows by selling the shirts. I should bring some to BOMA with me.
Is it going
to
have your face on it? Shirt.
No, it just has one of my jokes. It's a pickup line that I made as a joke.
The one you tweeted?
Yeah, the one that says, say, girl, are you a beaver? Because damn, you're hairy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one. So I'll sell those, because I do that joke on my set, and I'll sell those. And just like, just when you go to a concert, if you want something to remember, buy the shirt. So it's like the koozies that I sell. Merch is a big moneymaker for musicians.
Oh, no doubt about
big
it.
Big moneymaker.
Absolutely.
Somebody said, Barry, stop hating on Riff Raff. He's a Houston success story. No, I'll keep hating on him. You don't tell me what to do.
What's DeBrat worth?
DeBrat?
Because DeBrat is now doing radio in Atlanta that is also televised from time to time.
DeBrat-a-tat-tat.
1.5? Really?
That's 1.5 million. Yeah, that's it.
That's
crazy. She had a little stint on MTV too, didn't she?
What do you mean?
Either is in a series or one of the made-for-MTV TV shows.
I don't know.
I thought she was in on that too.
Somebody has a question for you. This definitely isn't for me, because I don't care.
Okay.
Hey, what's the likelihood if the Packers beat the Browns next week, A-Rod comes back against the Panthers and leads the Pack to a wild card berth? And it's not out of the realm of possibilities.
It's not. As much as I said it was over when he got hurt.
I know you were just reverse jinxing it.
No, but I think I turned out to be quite the prognosticator on the Wisconsin scenario. But at the same time, if they lose this week, they'll hold him out. He won't play. I think as much as he wants to, they're not going to put him against that Carolina defense and get him hurt. But there is a shot.
Well,
not for the division, but for the wild card.
Well, the Packers have the tiebreaker over the Cowboys based on the head-to-head win percentage, but Detroit has the tiebreaker.
As of now, but they have one game left with them.
But so you'd still have to jump Detroit, you'd have to jump Atlanta and Carolina to get into that sixth spot.
Right.
So if you're going to, you have to play them against Carolina.
And Detroit.
Well, they're not going to lose against the Browns.
No, well, they shouldn't, but let me just tell you how bad Hundley is. I'm going to say
this again.
But at the same time, if they don't lose to the Browns and they know that they can control the head-to-head against Carolina and Detroit, then you will see him come back, and they will have a legitimate shot. But you got to watch Atlanta, because Atlanta, holding on to the last spot right now, beat them head-to-head, and that's going to mean something too. But if you listen to Clay Matthews, they never should have put him IR in the first place, that he's been pretty much ahead of schedule.
Huntley's bad. Dude, he threw for 84 yards.
That's pretty, yeah.
In overtime.
Not in a quarter. Not in a half.
Yeah, with four quarters.
In a game plus than overtime.
84.
Oof. Yeah, you better be able to hand that ball off and get out the
way.
Well,
I mean, you know, I would say the Bucks are better than the Browns, so the chances of the Packers beating the Browns is good.
Which is why it's going to be a game, and it's going to make me very upset.
It's amazing that this team has lost. Well, they before beating the Bucks, they had lost 5 of 6, and they're still in the hunt.
Mm-hmm.
That's how
bad the NFC really is.
That's crazy.
At the same time, when you look at it too, and you look at the scenarios that could play out, and I'm watching this. I mean, Hundley had the audacity last week to say, yeah, I don't want to be known as a running quarterback. I don't want to run too much. You can't pass. At least run so that you get some credibility back.
Oh, that's funny.
Awful.
We'll do the power rankings on the other side. It's 2:55.
Yeah.
But the new power rankings are out. Few surprises, I think. Okay. There's some movement at the top. Yeah, new number one. And even with a win, the Steelers fall.
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And that's what, and a lot will be determined by that big game, as we were talking about 2 weeks from now. Patriots Steelers is going to be a national TV game. That'll be one to watch. So we've got two in the books, one to go. Plenty more of the show. 1 hour before we turn it over to Fred, AJ, and the Blitz. So again, as we always tell you, if you want to join the show, the number is and always will be 713-780-3776. That will get you in via text or phone call, or you can hit us on Twitter. 60 minutes still coming your way. in just mere minutes. It's the Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.